When we think of famous leaders during the 18th century, we think of enlightened despots, monarchs who made important reforms in their countries in just about every aspect except for their own power. In other words, they tried to modernize just about everything except for how the country was run. In fact, they didn't want to compromise their power, they wanted to consolidate it, if possible. Many of these rulers have gone down in history as familiar names, such as Catherine the Great, Frederick the Great, Maria Theresa of Austria, among others. But Spain had its own enlightened leader, and a very successful one, even though he isn't as famous as the others. And he is the subject of today's episode of Spanish History 101. His name is Carlos III, and he ruled from 1759 to his death in 1788. When Fernando VI, the King of Spain, and his wife Barbara of Braganza died within a year of each other, the issue of succession came up again in this country, because they never had any children, presumably because they were unable to. The solution, however, was easier than the previous crisis at the beginning of the century, and that was Fernando's half-brother Carlos, who was the son of the former King Felipe V and his second wife, the ambitious Isabel Farnesio. If you recall, Isabel wasn't a big fan of Felipe's children from his prior marriage to Maria Luisa of Savoy, and Fernando VI, who would become the king, felt the brunt of that negativity, since she often tried to keep him out of center stage, even when he was named Prince of Asturias. For that reason, when Fernando and his wife Barbara ascended to the throne, they promptly removed Isabel from the court and sent her away to a palace in Segovia so she could stay out of government and royal affairs. She was miffed, but she wasn't about to give up. In fact, if there was one thing she wasn't very good at, it was dying. She outlived pretty much everyone. And for that reason, she saw her dream of being mother of a king realized when Carlos was proclaimed the monarch. Spain's shift towards modernizing did not begin with Carlos III. It started with the arrival of the Bourbon dynasty, with his father, Felipe V. He was the one who sort of got the ball rolling a little bit, and his half-brother, Fernando VI, continued in that direction. But Carlos, perhaps with this reign, the Enlightenment reached its height in this country. He was an incredibly versatile and talented individual and one of the country's greatest rulers. One thing that set him apart from most monarchs is that he came to the throne with a great deal of experience as king, nearly 25 years in all, as King of Naples. Mainly also King of Sicily, but he was more known for being King of Naples. There he was officially Carlo VII, though he was more commonly known as Carlo of Bourbon. This started back in 1734, and his reign would be one of the most successful Naples would experience. He made a lot of reforms regarding the economy, taxing, the administration there, and as well as cultural and educational advances, in addition to the building of monuments and other important buildings. He is said to have connected well with the people of all walks of life, and both he and his wife, Maria Amalia of Saxony, were widely respected and beloved by the people there. In fact, when they left for Spain in 1759, to take the throne there, the people were said to have been devastated, but at the same time, they loved them so much, they gave them a very warm farewell. Their reception in Spain apparently was equally festive. Now, unfortunately for Carlos, Maria Amalia would die in 1760, just barely a year after arriving. She wasn't delighted with her stay in Spain, her 1 year there, and she saw this country badly in need of reforming, and she had plenty of plans for its future, but then her health gave away prematurely. Carlos is said to have lamented that it was the only time in their 22 years of marriage that she had let him down. Carlos would never marry again, despite the fact his ministers strongly urged him to. And if he ever did have a romantic relationship informally or something on the side, so to speak, he must have been very discreet about it. In this sense, he wasn't your typical Bourbon king. Carlos is often seen as a king who temporarily halted Spain's slow decline and even returned the country, to a degree at least, to its former splendor, and even improved on that. His predecessors, Fernando VI and Felipe V, as we mentioned before, started to get things moving in that direction, but Carlos took everything to another level. His reign was full of initiatives, full of activity, and the results were somewhat mixed, but still, he left an indelible mark on the history of this country. As we were saying, this was the height of the Age of Reason, and Carlos intended on bringing many of his enlightened ideas, as well as those of Europe, into Spain. He surrounded himself with very good ministers. Some were Italian from his period in Naples, like a man named Grimaldi, another one, Esquilache. But there were also several very capable Spaniards there, such as Campomanes, Floridablanca, and Olavide, who was actually born in Peru, I believe. So anyway, where to start? Well, Carlos is often called the best mayor of Madrid, the best mayor Madrid ever had, because of the numerous projects that turned the city into one of the great European capitals. Since the Madrid he came upon when he returned as king was little more than a sort of dirty city, unfit to be the capital of a major power. To change this all, major infrastructure works were done, like sewage systems, street lights, running water. He also improved safety with a system of workers known as serenos, who were individuals who had a key to all the buildings in their neighborhood. At nighttime, they would let you into your home. This provided security as well as control over nocturnal activity. The profession of the sereno existed for many, many decades, even centuries. And in some parts of Madrid, as late as the 1990s, you had serenos. I actually remember seeing one in the neighborhood I used to live in. Carlos also completed the Royal Palace, which is the famous palace you see in Madrid today. They began to design the Prado Museum during this time, and they built many of the most well-known monuments of the city today, such as the Puerta de Alcalá and the fountains of Cibeles and Neptune. Carlos made an effort to improve Spain's economy and its industry. One thing he noticed that it was very difficult for trade and shipping to move around the country. So his team drew up a network of highways which went from the center, from the capital in the center of the country, to the different regions, sort of like spokes of a wheel. This setup of highways still basically exists today. During that time, some 2,000 kilometers of roads were said to have been built. And in addition to that, some 600 bridges were constructed. And this network also emphasized the importance of Madrid as the center of the nation, as the capital of the nation. Speaking of which, Carlos built on that notion that his father, Felipe V, had begun, which was to make Spain one nation and not a handful of kingdoms. He created a new flag, which is the one still used today, as well as Spain's current national anthem was composed during that time and is still used today. Institutions that were created during this time included the Bank of Spain, the Academy, the Royal Academy of Jurisprudence, and even Spain's famous national lottery, the oldest still in existence in the world, the one that paralyzes the country at Christmas time, was started during this time too. But anyway, other things I was telling you about before, he worked very hard on the economy, Spain's traditional weak point. Many of his projects would end up being ineffective or weren't even carried out, but at least he tried. He tried to make use of the vast regions of Spain, which had an agricultural potential beyond belief, but much of it was in disuse because the great landowners weren't interested in it. And also because the wool sector, known as the mesta, didn't want fences put up or crops grown to interfere with their annual migration of what must have been millions of sheep. That was a major industry for Spain. But he was able to limit the mesta's power somewhat. He also attempted to improve overseas operations and commerce. He opened it up to just about anyone in the empire and tried to improve production in the colonies of items that could be sent back home to Spain and items that were manufactured in Spain and could be sold abroad. He basically liberalized the economy in the hopes that the private sector would grow. Now, while this sounded enticing and sensible, it would also lead to wild fluctuations in the prices of things like grain. But that trade issue abroad was really important because basically it wasn't opened up completely to any country. It had to be within the empire. In other words, not everything had to go between Spain and its colonies, but rather the trade could move freely among the different ports and different territories and viceroyalties of the Spanish Empire, which was a big difference from the way things were done before. In the sector of social equality, he tried to do away with homelessness by incorporating vagrants and hobos into the navy, which may not be what many of those individuals wanted, but I guess in a certain way it was an attempt to provide them with something to do, with a profession and a home. There were also solutions provided for orphans and senior citizens, the typical people who were traditionally left behind in society. He improved educational opportunities for a larger part of the population. He supported public education, improved higher education, and fostered scientific investigation and research. So these reforms were comprehensive. Another important change was the increased role of the secular government and the decreased role of the church. This was intentional. Carlos had already had a number of run-ins with the Pope, when he ruled in Naples, and he continued to have issues with different orders that obeyed the Vatican before they obeyed him. And this was a typical enlightened despot issue. It's known as regalism, and it is the idea that the monarch should have supremacy over the church. But since the church was still very powerful in Spain, this was a difficult task. But to give you an example, one of the most influential religious orders at the time, the Jesuits, were expelled from Spain. They had already been expelled from other countries like France. But here, this was a little bit more ironic since the Jesuits were actually founded in Spain. Not everyone knows that. On the international front, Spain continued to work on revamping its navy and army, and it succeeded in doing that to a certain extent. It tried to stay out of most wars or participated in a fairly limited way. Spain struggled during the Seven Years' War. It lost. Carlos realized that he had to do something about the military. But then they got back at the British during the American Revolution when the Spanish played a key role in military operations in support of the colonies at the end of the war, and it recovered a number of important territories. Now, not everything was glorious during this period of Carlos III. One of the darkest moments was the infamous Esquilache riots in Madrid in 1766. The uprisings took place in Madrid. The traditional story says that had to do with a law that the Italian-born minister decided to impose on the population there. It was a ban on the use of long capes and a particular round hat in favor of shorter capes and the tri-cornered hats, which were so popular in many other parts of Europe. It was sort of pitched as a fashion preference, but it also had a lot to do with making sure that no one could conceal a weapon, or at least that's how some people took it. At first, it really wasn't that controversial, but this problem had more to do with other problems that the population was suffering from, especially extreme hunger and extremely high prices of products, your basic products like bread. Riots broke out and spread. The violence was so great that Carlos himself left the city and took refuge in the palace of Aranjuez, which is about an hour south of Madrid. Esquilache was removed from office and sent back to Italy, and the incident damaged Carlos's image, at least temporarily. And in fact, some of the blame for the riots was placed on the Jesuits. It looks like it was an excuse to get rid of them, and so that was part of the reason why they were officially expelled from Spain, at least for a while. They've returned since then. So, and what else? And one final contribution I want to talk about today, on a lighter note, which was made by the royal couple and which still actively exists to this very day, is the introduction of the nativity scene, or the creche, or the crib, depending on what country you live in, the word you use, a tradition taken from their days as rulers in Naples. It was apparently Maria Amalia's idea to do this, and 250 years later, it is still very popular in this country. Basically, every household and many stores and many, obviously many churches will have their own nativity scene. So even on that level, this period in Spanish history has had a profound effect even on modern Spain. I could go on and on. There's just so much to say about this period, but let's stop at this point. I think you've got the idea of what we're talking about. And also because the fate of Spain is going to take a major shift in a different direction, and things unfortunately are about to fall apart rather quickly. But let's keep you in suspense and wait for another day. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos, or you can check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe there. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.